Welcome to C-Lab, the Customer Education Lab, where we explore how to build customer education programs, experiment with new approaches, and exterminate the myths and bad advice that stop growth dead in its tracks. I'm Deek Pila.
And I'm Ryan Rock.
Now, you may have noticed that we are not Dave and Adam, your usual C-Lab hosts.
What do you mean you're not Dave and Adam, the usual hosts of C-Lab?
Nope. This is our annual year-end episode where we kick back and have some fun. You know, in previous years, we've done episodes on, like, what Radiohead and David Bowie can teach us about customer education.
But this year, we thought we would mix it up and do a crossover with another great podcast called He Said, D Said, where the D in question is our friend D Kapila, who leads customer education at Miro. And the he in question is her husband, Ryan Rock, who is a customer success executive.
Hello.
Hello, everybody.
All right, so tell us about the format of He Said, D Said.
You want to take this one?
Well, so usually I say something, and then she says something. And it's about something.
Okay.
I've heard a couple of episodes.
Here I would come in.
This is gonna be great.
Have you heard a couple episodes?
I've heard a couple of episodes.
So you've heard the entirety of our catalog.
Yeah, that's the whole run.
Because we've only got two.
I mean, I wasn't gonna say that.
Yeah.
But here we are.
That's amazing.
So tell us about the something. Like, what's the something that you guys are usually
talking
about?
So usually it boils down to, like, pop culture. We noticed a long time ago, because we've been together since the dawn of time, and we have a lot of really great conversations, back and forths, disagreements, what have you, about pop culture. Usually the thing we're talking about the most. Books, movies, music, whatever it is. And she has some very strong views. And I have been told that I cultivate her views on a great number of subjects.
Mm.
So this was just a place for us to get together and kind of share that with the world and have some laughs doing it.
Sweet.
I like laughs. That's fun. But the other weird part about this is that not only are we a pair of podcast hosts, but we are also a pair of customer success, customer education people. So, like,
yeah,
Dave, what does that mean?
I don't know. So let's just say what we're going to do for this one. I'm super stoked about this because, like, getting kind of like a four-way crossover. Well, we got to do more of these crossover episodes, you know, where we each bring our own pop culture a favorite. And today let's do, like, with a twist. We're going to talk about what they can teach us about customer education and customer success. I actually got some fun. I can't wait to turn to this. Let's do this.
Okay, well, Dave, then why don't you actually get us started? So basically, we're all going to go around. Each of us is going to share our pop culture thing, something maybe we've enjoyed in the last year or maybe longer. Who knows? It's been a global pandemic. We have no idea how time works. And then we can summarize what it is. We can debate it a little bit and then talk about how it applies or doesn't apply to customer success and customer education. How about that?
Cool. We all want to thread it in, or we just, like, want to do one and then go around the room and then come back and do another one? Does that work?
Yeah, let's have everyone go once and we can, like, fully debate their ideas and their thing. And then the next person will go, next person will go, next person will go. And then if we're feeling extra feisty, maybe we can do a quick lightning round at the end with, like, something else we like this year just to share with each other. We don't even have to talk about what it has to do with customer education.
Oh, I love it. We have that segment at the end of our show. Grab bag.
I know. That's what I'm trying to emulate, your grab bag.
You're amazing hosts. Let's do it.
All right, Dave, you want to get us started?
Yeah, I'll get us started by talking about a game that maybe a couple, but a game that I really have fallen in love with in 2021 in this pandemic. I don't know if any of you have played it. It's called Slay the Spire. You heard of this?
That's the card one, right?
Yeah, it's a deck building game. It's a roguelike. I have to intro myself this way. I taught video game design at a university, Webster University in St. Louis, for like 7-8 years. Actually, I crossed a couple of universities. I found this amazing book, which I'm going to talk about a little bit possibly today, Art of Game Design. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when I play games, I always am thinking now about my job, because one of the things about the games that we play is let's think in terms of customer success. What are the stages of like, we think largely we're a B2B SaaS. We're big, you know, companies working enterprise type stuff. We're selling to other businesses, you know, but the same things apply in games. So let me talk about Slay the Spire. So it's a game, card game on a video game. right? A video game platform. On all the platforms out there, it's amazing. So basically what you do is you're the theme, it could be irrelevant, but the theme is that you are a warrior or something, and you see this huge tower. You go into the tower and you have to like go through a floor at a time. And there's like three or four levels. And you're defeating enemies, but you have to use it in a very strategic and technical way. So you get issued a series of cards, and you can like select to buy some, or you get some as prizes. You get all kinds of things like artifacts, which augment the abilities that you have and give you like more health or more damage or poison or whatever. Cards do all kinds of different things. They give you buffs, debuffs. Sometimes there's penalties. Sometimes there's negative things. And it's that, okay, I play, then the enemy plays. I play, the enemy plays. Pretty standard, but it's so easy to pick up. The thing that I like most about it is that, you know, I think this is something you see a lot in B2C type applications. The thing I like to say is video games really have that same thing, like onboarding. How do you onboard? A video game onboards you by saying, oh, you see some marketing, you see some cool stuff, and then you start playing the game. And in Slay the Spire, the kind of game that it is and the way that it educates you is through failure. Right? We don't say this a lot, you know, but a roguelike, I think, is a lot like enterprise SaaS software. This is my assertion. And you can challenge me if you want. But look, okay, whether I was using Outreach or Gainsight or what have you, as an educator and a customer success person, when I go in to learn about that application, I'm kind of learning it like I do a video game. I'll go and I love to open up the app. And I take the book, chuck it. What is this thing? What am I going to do? What is it? Does it make sense to me? The thing that I've learned from video games, and Slay the Spire I think is a good one, is that it gives you an intelligible interface. I see how much health I've got. I've got bars in the bottom. I've got cards I can play. Okay, I get it. Now what? Right? That's the next step. Like you log into an application. You see, okay, I get it. Yeah, I'm doing this thing. So you start off there, and in the game, it's basically I play a card, you take damage, and you try to level yourself up. The thing I like most is, like I was saying, this is an experiential education. It doesn't tell you a lot about what you can do. It doesn't. There's no instruction manual, right?
You just get like thrown in.
You get
right?
thrown in, and you in
walk in, break stuff.
Yeah, walk in, break yeah. stuff.
Now, Dave, I got this game actually because of you, because you talked about it. I think actually,
hey, I get a referral bonus. All right,
you told me about it. Yeah, that's right. Okay, but I have an important question for you. How do you get past the second level?
So have you gotten to the heart yet?
No.
Okay. Well, each time some of those levels are different. The main thing about the game that the meta of the game will teach you over time is that you have this juxtaposition of, okay, how much health can I lose? At what point should I or can I take a buff or over, okay, let's do it like this. As I'm walking through the levels, the way that I've learned to play this game is that, okay, you've got a health meter. And generally when I get halfway down that health meter, like you have options, and the options are I could select more cards and I can get some artifacts, and those help you a lot because you're trying to build up a lot of defense, offense, so that you can make it through the game. You've got to build up a lot of that. And the other thing about it, the meta of the game has cards building off of one another. So I might, for example, go down a poison route and be able to apply a lot of poison, but then there's some cards that take that poison and double it, right? So what you're doing is strategically trying to remove cards that aren't helpful and add cards that power you up and keep your, and there's the thing I've learned from YouTube. Now, again, I use a lot of my customer education for games out of YouTube, where you see people do playthroughs and they're telling you what I'm telling you, right? So that's one of the main differences about video games. I spend a lot of time on Twitch, YouTube, or whatever, learning about how other people play the game. To get through that second one, what you need to do is get to the point where you have, I go all in and get as many of the artifacts that I can, and I try to make a really tight set that I can churn through really quick. I shouldn't use the word churn. We'll do that later.
After all.
Sus people, I'm sorry, but you'll eventually like get all the way away. But
we need to renew and expand the deck as quickly as
right,
possible.
Right, so more PTSD. People adopt, yeah. And we retain a set of cards. So,
Dave, what would you say your card's NRR is?
Oh my god.
Okay, keep going.
Well, that's really the core mechanic of the game. Like, you're supposed to get through all these levels. You keep a balance of your health with your attack. You build up a nice tight deck. That deck, the cards play off of each other. They're resonant with one another, right? And then you move up and up and up that tower to the point where you get to the heart. And I don't want to spoil the game, but basically that's how you end up beating the game. It's painful. You learn a lot. You learn a lot about yourself and what decisions? Well, that's a stupid decision. Why did I make that decision? And eventually over time, you'll get good at it. And it's just like using real software to become, you know, like, especially when you get to a point where you're thinking about ops, how do I build some way of using my app to get an outcome? The outcome I want from Slay the Spire is to beat, you know, Slay the Spire. Seems a little vague, but it's a really easy game to pick up. But again, there's not really a lot of education. The education is extrinsic to the platform.
So cool. How often were you switching those cards
around? Constantly. So you'll start with a deck, and basically, the starter deck is you get like five attacks, so they're just I'll do five damage, and five defense, mm-hmm. and be able to take five. So basically, each round, the enemies will either attack or defend. And you can kind of get a hint as what they're going to do, but you don't know how much or what. And you usually get a couple special mm-hmm. cards, and they're just not fancy. So over time, you're going, okay, well, I got to stay back and defend this round. And the next round, okay, I'm going to select a couple of different cards, and I'm going to get rid of some of the crappy cards that I have. But it's really a balance. There's an economy. You get money. You get gold. So over time, like,
but the game forces you to use it those. Forces cards. You. Like, you have to use them.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, to make.
Yeah, they're not. Game. They're not like. You don't hoard them. Like every. Absolutely. Yeah, like every battle you walk into, you have like a deck, and you have to like go through the deck.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. I ask this because I have something similar in my example. Ooh. That actually taught me a lot about my strengths and weaknesses.
Well, it sounds like a good transition.
Ask Wait, about yours.
Did you bring the Lominger competency cards?
Oh my god.
Well, let's get into yours. I think we should go around robin and talk about
wait no, hold on, let's before we move on, let's yeah. You're gonna let's talk about how this applies to customer education, customer success a little bit more.
Okay, so let's go through the four topics of customer success. Really, it's what I think the game does well is it onboards you effectively through the game, learning the game itself in the game. There's not much that you have to figure out. I know I have cards. I know I have artifacts. I didn't mention potions. Potions give you other buffs or debuffs accordingly. If once I understand that, then I understand I have attack or defend. I have to move through levels. To beat the game, I have to get through a series of levels and attack the heart. That's easy. Now, the game teaches you through, like I said before, failure. You're making mistakes. You're making decisions. And eventually it starts to become clear to you because there's an infinite array, essentially, of choices. Not really, but the combinatorial explosion of choices that you have is way out there. So onboarding is easy. Some of the things that are frustrating, though, like if you think about customer success, is I really got frustrated with this game at a certain point. And I thought, okay, well, I'm going to churn. I call that bouncing in video game land. So, you know, like I bounced off that game. Like I didn't get, it's something, it made me mad. And I'll,
yeah. Like in Google Analytics when you bounce, like bounce,
yeah,
right?
Yeah. And I think that's one area where the game is a little bit, it's demanding. And roguelites are really, really punishing because you have to presume you're never going to win or you're very rare.
Yeah, I have a roguelike for mine too. So this is going to be an interesting compare and contrast.
Yeah. So, you know, I've quit several times. Just, I can't play it anymore. And then I'll come back. I'm like, oh, I really want to play that game again. So there's that element of the, is it too hard for people? And there's, you really do have to go spend some time on Twitch or YouTube and watch videos to understand how to get better. So in that, I don't think it does well in game. If I were to criticize it any, I think finding some way to communicate, okay, well, how do these cards build off of each other? Can you give me a primer? How do I get to that? It doesn't do that. But then again, that's why I like this game, because as a customer education person, you know, I'm experimenting and exploring. And obviously, you know, I've got some other things like word of mouth, because I played the game. There is your NPS. Would you refer to a friend? Obviously, they did a good job on that because I did. And I've said that to several people. In fact, my friend Evan, which we had in the show a while back, he's the one that got me hooked. And I'm like, damn it, Evan. I'm hooked on this game.
Yeah.
And then he tells me
to. Well, and you got me to buy it too.
Yeah. So it's.
There.
Although I think I've bounced at this point. Like, I can't get past the second level, so it's really hard for me to get
you
back in.
You don't have
now.
An emotional attachment. It's not part of your, like, strategic digital transformation to go back to this game.
I would say it's not. And the emotional attachment part is interesting. I'm going to bring that up in mind.
Yeah. Too, well, so. Yeah. And that is one thing about the game. It's like, emotionally, I think it's really about a point of pride now because I have friends that play it. And like, yeah, I beat it once. Okay, cool. But I don't have that much of an emotional attachment. It's a game that I like. I feel comfortable with. And it keeps me playing. I'll come back and I'll probably play it once every week, every other week. So those are some of the things. That's something that I'd say for the customer success part of it.
Another thing that strikes me, like, from a customer education, customer success standpoint is, like, whenever you talk about a deck building game, you're talking about resource management.
Yeah.
Right, because like by like de facto, when you have a deck and you can only do things with that deck and you have the ability to add and remove things from your deck, which happens pretty frequently in Slay the Spire, you're fundamentally talking about resource management. And the interesting thing is, like, you'd think maybe in a game like that, and maybe this is just because I'm not very good at deck building games, that like your goal should be to keep growing and growing and growing your deck so you have more options.
Yeah.
But because you have to like keep going through your deck, you don't know that you're going to get the card that you actually want or the card that's going to like play well with the other one, like in your example earlier, Dave, about the poison.
Yeah, you don't know.
And so in some ways, it's like you actually have to keep removing inessential things from your deck so you can be like as efficient as possible.
Yeah.
Which is kind of true in customer education, right? The more you create, the more that's in your deck and you're churning through inessential cards. So it's like in your customer education portfolio, you actually want to like remove inessential cards from your deck that aren't actually like maximizing the other ones.
That's a really good point, and that's something we don't think we don't think about that a lot. Like, well, actually we do, but it's too late. And that's a point in Slay the Spire where I have 27 cards and I can't do a darn thing because it's just all noise.
It's so funny that all of us have picked something that goes into a resource management game aspect of what we do. Like, all the things that we've all picked, I think we'll talk about that today.
That's interesting. It's telling about all of us.
I mean, games are like kind of about resource management. A lot right? Unless you're just like in a complete like open world sandbox and you don't have like inventory.
Okay, wait. I got to say this right now. I completely forgot about this. Evan, again, going back to Evan. Evan and I actually built a game for Gainsight, which was a I got to get it out because it was actually fun and it was customer success, the game. And it was really,
I was never going to play.
No, you would love it. Like we actually showed it to Nick Mehta and Allison Pickens when we were at Gainsight and we had a party night one night. And they got into it and it was all about, you basically have resources, three different types of resources, and you had cards. So basically you got every round a set of customers and then you had resources that you had to spend. So you only had so many resources and those are the resources you could apply to helping out those customers. Every customer had either yellow, red, or blue resources. So you had to spend those resources to work calls to action or things that they're saying to burn those down to retain the customers. And at the end of the game, the person with the most customers retained, and they were making the most resources won. And we're like, okay, this is just like work. It's not that fun now. We got to figure this out.
See, you're giving me flashbacks to resource management as far as time and allocation and priority on product feedback from customers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, you only have so many spins at the wheel with the product team.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true.
Gosh, this is giving me like flashbacks. We used to be very competitive in Monopoly within like a particular group of our friends. And over the holidays, we would be like, these were games that would go on to like 4 a.m. in the morning, 5 a.m. And everybody is like a pretty healthy age. Like, you know, we've been around the block a few times. Like, we're all going to bed at 9:30, 10. So to be up that late for each of us playing, this is intense. And I was just thinking, I wonder, like, if there's that Monopoly version 2 of CS where instead of like landing on a property, you're like landing on Acme customer, which is like a larger enterprise customer. So you're actually going to use like more of your resources versus like a smaller startup customer. Anyway,
there's a game.
I want to see this.
There's a game. I'll get it out. There's a game in there. It can be built. It would actually be kind of fun.
Yeah.
When I was interviewing at Optimizely, one of the questions that they asked was, if you had unlimited resources and unlimited time, like what would you build? And my answer was like A/B testing the game. And I never got to make A/B testing the game, but kind of same idea, Dave. I'm impressed that you and Evan brought that to life.
Yeah, it was pretty much done, and then we, I don't know what happened. We'll have to dig it up.
It's interesting because I kind of almost hate that question because I want there to be constraints. Like, constraints are good.
Oh, like the interview question?
Yeah, mean? That interview yeah. question, yeah.
I don't hate it necessarily because it gets you...
Blue sky creative.
Yeah, like, gets you thinking outside of, like, the practical reality.
Yeah, but it's almost like a lot of those really good things happen, particularly if you're, like... focusing on programs and building mm-hmm. and launching them happen when you have those constraints. You have to have those trade-offs.
Yeah, it's a creativity through right? constraint.
Makes it much more, yeah.
Some of the best updates and changes and scenes in movies have come because they ran out of budget or the shark wasn't working or something.
Oh, like in Indiana Jones where he like shoots the guy because he didn't actually want to like do the fight.
He had the stomach flu and he could barely move without throwing up, so he just shot the guy. And Steven Spielberg was like, "That's amazing."
So good. I love that though too, because I know in a lot of y'all's previous episodes, you've talked about like program journeys and like you know just team journeys and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are part of the journey. Or you know, you were talking a second ago, Dave, about mistakes, but mistakes can sometimes actually be like happy ones. Failure can be like a happy mistake.
Yeah.
Isn't that something that like Dumbledore said?
Yeah.
I'm trying not to just quote Yoda right now.
Yeah, I know. Oh my God. Like some wise somebody that says something about
it. I forgot
that,
it. Actually,
right? Like they're part of it.
I actually have my card deck. We had cards built up.
Oh, look at that.
So it's like put customers on there. Like these were market cards. So we had to go to market and and get a customer. And then here's the CTA cards, the calls to action. So we use Gainsight terminology, but I don't know if you could even see it up here, but the top of the cards had different resources. So here it was a 3 blue.
Oh,
so you had to spend 3 blues, which were these little things, to work that call to action.
For audio listeners, Dave is holding up a bag of little red, game dice. Yellow, and blue gems and some dice.
Yeah, it was crazy. Wow.
Flashback. This is amazing. So maybe it's a bonus episode. You and Daniel Quick can play the customer success game together.
I think we should finish it and we'll get Evan in there.
Yeah, you and Evan. All right. Should we move on?
Yeah, move on.
Yeah.
Have we drained this?
Yeah. We slayed that spire.
Yeah.
We made it to the heart. All right.
Post-heart.
Yeah, who wants to go next? I want either he or D.
I'll jump in, yeah, because mine's a game too, but okay, so I have to preface this by saying this is the best game I've played during the pandemic, probably top 3 of all time games I've ever played. I'm on my 4th like playthrough, end to end, trying to really like discover it, tackle it in different ways, and every time it's been a different journey. So I strongly recommend that you all go out and play this game. It's gorgeous. It's lush. It's deep. It's emotional. It's so much fun. It's called Hollow Knight.
Is it a video game?
You've heard of it, probably.
Yeah.
It is a video
game.
Yeah,
I've got it.
Correct.
I have not played it yet.
Okay. You have to. It's stunning. Oh, my God. So, okay. Basically, it's a platformer, side-scroller.
Metroidvania.
What's a Metroidvania?
Ryan, do you want to?
So it's taken from the name of the Metroid series and the Castlevania series, which are typically side-scrolling platform action where you jump from place to place, mm-hmm. you explore, you kill enemies, and you are blocked from progressing to certain areas until you go back to other areas that you've been to and unlock abilities or tools or keys to get to the new areas.
Okay, so you have to get like a power up. Like there's an area that's like too high for you to jump to, and you have to
Correct.
Get the like rocket
Exactly.
boosters or something
Right.
to get there.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And or you have to get a certain mission accomplished in order for that to open up because the mission contains like a password, secret, whatever,
yeah, okay.
things like that, right? So it could be a skill or it could be like a key, right, yeah. for you to progress. And that is actually like my first point. So you didn't even know what I was going to say, Ryan, but you set it up beautifully.
Hey.
Clearly, it's a good, strong marriage.
Dave, I wish our marriage could be
yeah,
as strong.
I know. We're in counseling. It's fine.
It is more, yeah, it is. But that's one of the things I think that I tie back to really building customer education from scratch in any context, right? Because what you do in this game is you're essentially going through the first level. You maybe complete 25% of it before you're able to go into level two. Maybe you complete 30% of that before you move on. And pretty much you have to come back to each of those levels in like the middle of different levels in that game because you acquired something and then you either remembered you needed to go back there or you can't move further in level four or five, whatever it is, without going back to the first level and doing a certain thing. Either prompted or unprompted, you will naturally sort of gravitate about, you know, back to that level one to get that thing or do that thing. Mm-hmm. And what I really liked about this is that's kind of the way that you build a customer education program. You don't start by saying, yeah. Okay, so like in my case, for example, we have a live program, you know, which is like webinars, but it's also consulting. Then we have on-demand education, which is through our academy. We've got a help center. Then we've got in-app. You don't like start with one pillar, go all the way down that T and then go, whew, I've done a great job. I'm going to now go do the second thing all the way down and so on and so forth. You start with like the big top offerings across each of those. Yeah. And then you go back and you build and you go back and you build and you go back and you build. Then let's say your company IPOs or it gets bigger or you acquire someone, whatever happens in the life of that company, you're now going back and you're editing what you did, redoing maybe what you did before. Maybe your focus initially was end users. Now you're kind of balancing it between like enterprise customers as well as like those organic growth end users. So you start to change things, particularly when you're building at scale and you need to like revise those scaled programs over and over again. So that journey in Hollow Knight was just very much happening while I was also building this.
Oh, wow.
These programs here at Miro from scratch. So, I mean, it was like life, art, you know, that, yeah, you know, that whole deal. Yeah. It was amazing. So I loved that element of it quite a bit.
Hmm. Questions now.
Yeah.
I love that thought. Well, what is, I'm going to pick on retention first. So what is the thing about that game? Like, do you play it now? Do you ever go back to it? Or you,
oh, this is my fourth time.
Well, yeah, duh. You said that fourth time. Why? Now that means
she's expanding.
That means a lot. Like retention. Let's talk about retention first. Yeah. Retention in a product, customer success notion, but it also the education part of that has something to do with it. What is it that keeps you coming back? Is it new, different?
Yeah. Well, I guess since we're talking about CS, you're asking me what is the value that keeps bringing me back to that game, right? So I think, and I feel the same way about games that are less maybe philosophical, like let's even say a fighting game. Mm-hmm. Like why do you keep going back to a fighting game, right? There's particular games that I'm really drawn to because you're able to continually explore yourself and who you are through them. That sounds cheesy. I apologize, but I mean it like very earnestly. What's interesting to me about this game is that every single time I've played it in a different way, and I've felt like that I found something new about it that I hadn't found before. And I am definitely one of those I play a ton of video games. I get very involved in them. They're so immersive. They really work with me. Whereas like I can't sit down and watch a movie. Like Ryan has to like swat a phone out of my hand because I want to like play Bejeweled. Right? And the best thing, by the way, that he says to me when we're watching a movie and he wants to like politely ask me to not be on my phone is he's like, honey, this is a visual movie. And I'm like, okay, whatever. I'll put down my phone. But the thing with the games is that, you know, first of all, you can't do anything, right? Like your hands are not on your phone. They're on the controller. You're using like every single thing that's going on. Your brain is completely, you're either fighting someone or trying to solve a puzzle or something. So they do that beautifully in this game.
It would be funny if while you were playing the game, there was like Bejeweled Blitz happening in the corner. Yeah, also have to like go play that.
Yeah. Who knows? I mean, who knows? But the real reason is because the emotional journey has been slightly different for me every time. And I've been able to get something from that game. Like I'll be latently processing something that I'm trying to solve at work and this is how I'm winding down and something in the game will like trigger an idea, right? And it's sort of the same thing that people say I get my best ideas in the shower or while I'm pooping or whatever or running or whatever it is, right? Like for me, they happen when I'm playing video games and I'm trying to solve a problem that's complete. I know, I love talking
about it. Anyway. Maybe in 2022, this should be like our opening question. Like where do you get your best ideas and is it while you're pooping?
Oh, this is the best by far episode we've ever had.
Let's start every interview. We'll be like interviewing CEOs like,
So, tell me about your poop. Yes.
You know, I think some of them that we've worked with would answer that question.
Welcome to C-Lab, the only customer education process where we talk about our feces.
Yes. Love it.
All right. We've grown that.
I did that. It's fine. So I'll be kind of chewing on that problem, playing the game, and then something in that game will like either alert me to, hey, here's a potential way to solve the problem, or hey, here's how you're getting in your own way. Maybe reconsider the context or something like that, mm-hmm. right? So that's why I keep going back to games like this over and over, because whatever's happening in my mind in that moment in time, I can now put onto this game, and it shall reveal the answer.
Huh.
Okay, that's really interesting, because like, I see what you're saying. And I think like maybe one of the reasons why that happens is because you're like using a different part of your brain. Now, I'm not a neuroscientist, mm-hmm. so like, I can't really speak to exactly what's going on from a neuroscience perspective, but like, you're kind of like when you're in the shower or like when you're playing a video game, you can process things kind of in different ways than you might when you're like doing work and thinking about work.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I really want to engage with what you just said, but like you just kind of like triggered something in me for a moment. I kind of want to debate it.
Take this journey.
There's this whole idea that in customer education, we're supposed to gamify what we do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right? Like gamification is supposed to be the solution to all of our problems. And the problem I have sometimes with gamification is we treat it like if we can produce customer education that is somehow also a game or is game-like enough, that is going to motivate and engage people to somehow be better at learning. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that works in most cases because it's like you're using the same part of your brain, or maybe because like when your goal is to drive performance and not to drive like recreation, there's something about that doesn't like quite line up in terms of like...
It sounds like it's treating the symptom and not the underlying cause. Like, if you're trying to increase adoption and you're trying to get people more focused on using your tool, it has to simply be about solving their problem. Mm-hmm. It has to be, because the first thing is you're going to ask them to go to 3 days of onboarding or something like that, and they're going to say, well, now I have to think about ways to solve for all the work I won't do.
Yeah.
And if you're not answering that question during that process, they're just going to be resentful and they're going to say, all right, what do I have to do to get out of here?
Yeah, that's such a good point.
Yeah, because like it was retention. It was like the term retention that got me thinking about this, and like how like gamification is supposed to be a solution for engaging and then retaining people in the learning. Mm-hmm. But I think you're right. It's like when like if the game isn't recreational for them and it's something they feel like they have to do anyway, like is adding a gamified layer going to motivate them any more than?
Let me.
Well, I mean, I have a hot take on that too.
Yeah, I wanted to tap on gamification because, like I said, I spent a lot of time thinking about games in game design, and I'm going to say this out loud. I hate the word. I hate it, and I hate it for because it really completely defiles what we're trying to do.
Well, I don't want to be too crass here, Dave, but I talked to gamification and it said some very similar things about you.
How much have you been drinking? Goodness.
The drama.
No, like so what I'm trying to get to is in all seriousness is that when I think of gamification, I think of a kind of different space. So there have been game examples of done well, like Toggle, TOGGL is an app that I use just for personal time tracking. But when I first started using it, I logged in and then I got this notification and it said, hey, you did this, you achieved, you solved something, and it gave me a little badge. I'm like, okay, now what? Oh, I see that there's 3 more things I can do or 4 more. And it peeled back some layers for me and it motivated me like an Xbox game would, you know, like a video game would. Mm-hmm. To a point, just to a point, because that's a personal motivation. So where I think gamification actually taps into is community, and it goes into this edge of our customer education universe where, okay, to me, gamifying something just for me to say I get some points or whatever, but if that doesn't somehow reflect on my personality or persona or the greater world, like I'm now, when I'm thinking gamifying, I'm thinking other people. I'm thinking play, you know, like, and that's where like, oh, I've got 2,000 points in the Miroverse community or something, because I've done some certain things and I've shown off some work I've done and I've shared a couple templates, and now that comes back to, like, you know, look at my Xbox profile and I've got 11,000 points. Okay, what does that mean? It means I've been really active in the space and I have some credit. Yeah. So I think about it differently.
I want to see a Dave template in Miroverse.
Well, I'm working on one right now. Customer education, good. Design, okay.
That's amazing. Well, I totally see what you're saying. I will also say, like, it's tough because sometimes I do feel like the way that we can think about gaming or gamification or whatever you want to call it in the context of our work can be a bit of a conceit, right? It's a little bit more for us than it is for the end user experience. And also a little bit counterintuitive, like, to even consider or to consider not doing it, because the idea here is we want to get people back into our product.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
And so unless it's like a truly motivating thing or it brings value to them, I would even say beyond motivation, it becomes problematic in terms of like your business goals. Right. So I think like managing those two things is really important in making a decision. I'll give you an idea an example. There's a company that I worked for that was very kind of like a, let's do VR in education, let's do AR in education, let's do gamification. Like, just if it was cool, we needed to figure out a way to bring it into work, like, for
chase the
optics,
trend. Yeah.
Right? Yep. And the first game that was like really pushed for us to do was actually to a field sales audience.
Hmm, interesting.
I don't even need to go into the details of this to tell you.
They're competitive. They like games, right?
No, they're on the road. They're accessing information about a huge portfolio of products that is rapidly changing, and you're going to make them go through a game when they need answers that they're looking for in their parking lot outside their customer's building right before a meeting. Like, I was horrified, and clearly, like, there had been no conversations or, like, no talking to the user that had been done, because, like, I mean, it was just, like, very problematic,
it's,
right?
Well, that's like what I'm saying about having to focus training and onboarding around the outcome that user needs. You can't tailor training to every individual user that you're onboarding. You just can't. But what you can do is say, what are the common problems that this customer needs to solve as an organization? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
How are we tailoring this approach to solving those problems? Yeah. Because the five groups from three different teams are all going to be focused on, all right, listen, I'm only using this to pull reports three times a week. That's all I care about. That's all I'm doing.
Yeah. It's like, you need to know your audience, and you kind of need to, like, five whys, like, with the request for gamification. It's like, okay, what about gamification is important here? Is it the idea of having challenge? Is it the idea of having some sort of, like, points or extrinsic rewards? Is it about fun, like adding a sense of like fun or lightheartedness to it? And those are all different things, and you kind of like pull the string on each of those. Okay, why is that important for this audience?
Completely.
And sometimes it actually might even just be like scaffolding, like how Dave was describing earlier in Slay the Spire, just like the idea of kind of progressively onboarding someone into something.
Yeah,
like that might be gamification.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, and getting like a low stakes certification is also gamification in some way, right? It's like a very valid, much more trusted way to gamify something. But like, there's so many ways in which we do it that I think we've stopped using as examples for, hey, we're actually gamifying the experience here, or we are actually doing these things that are rich, that work really well, that have become so seamless.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably why we don't refer to them as such.
Like, you're using the experience points that you've collected. You've developed these abilities, and you're using them to beat the boss, which is like the five question assessment.
An assessment is gamification.
And then you get the loot drop from the assessment, which is your badge. And then you share it on LinkedIn, which is Xbox Live? I don't know.
Could be.
If that really works. And I think, like, it really works. Like,
it does. And the community piece that you mentioned, Dave, I think is like the key to doing it really well, right? Like, that's where the value really exists with things like this, as opposed to saying, you know, hey, we're going to have you go through this like getting started course, for example, and like we're going to gamify the whole thing. Like, no.
You know, the thing I saw, probably not there. Like, the badging is huge. That and at Outreach, when we implemented our badging program, Oh my God, the certification, I would do certification very differently again, because high stakes cert is difficult, and it's difficult for everybody. But the coolest thing I saw, and this is where the only way I'd like really tap into the gamification, is when I started seeing the pride and the joy of the people showing that, you know, certified administrator badge out on LinkedIn, and all the groundswell of people coming up to like it and say great job and stuff. It was meaningful. And it was so cool because everybody, including us, the customer, the partners that got it, it was that part of it is good. It's that warm vibe, like saying I did it and it means something. And just like
we are now part of a community of people who have this skill and this thing to show for it. That is it.
I will say that when I used to go through training programs, and there would be badging or there would be points assigned within the framework of whatever I was doing, you know, only that program, I remember just thinking like, okay, cool.
whatever
those certifications became something I could share or add to my profile, I immediately cared. I was like, okay, yeah, the logo of this is ridiculous, but this is a certification. This shows a baseline that I can compare against my other contemporaries.
Yes.
I immediately cared. There's no difference. It's just where you can put it.
Which is why I think for a lot of people, like if you kind of do that five whys activity and you figure out like what is it about gamification or what is it about certification that you're actually trying to drive, if it comes down to that idea of like social proof to your peers or trying to like baseline at some level what the skills are, a lot of that won't drive you towards creating a high stakes certification with legal defensibility and building up all that process for yourself. It's literally like if the end goal is kind of social proof or I mean, some might call that like social learning, that dictates an entirely different set of requirements.
It does. And I mean, you know, talking to the learners is like the other thing I would do on the side of that five whys, right? It's like,
what, talk really to your customers?
To like five
really?
Of them.
Yeah.
Like it's weird because you can talk to your customers all day, but I found at least like recently, they're so much more passionate and have so much, I think like more tactical steps they want you to take when it comes to certification or whatever in the credentialing umbrella than they do about your product. Like, that's what I found. And it's been really interesting to me. And I think it might be because, like, a lot of, you know, for, like, PLG companies, there are consultants and there are folks who have their own businesses and they are basically bringing in clients. And so they need to be able to prove out before using your tool or onboarding to your tool, like, this is a skill that I have and it's, like, something you can trust. And it's been fascinating for me versus when I've been in like heavily regulated industries before and done higher stakes certification or DTC kind of like, you know, programs. And Dave, like you too, I did get my start in kind of teaching gaming. And I actually focused on like the kind of younger kind of high school into college women and girls and self-identifying girls population. So this was like, had this panel at South by Southwest that was called like gaming is a gateway drug, like getting girls into STEM. You know, we did this like amazing kind of like after school camp through a nonprofit here in Austin where they like got to play games. I mean, we played everything from like Mortal Kombat, which like a lot of parents were questioning why are my like teen girls playing this game? I was like, hold on, just stay with me. You know, to some of the more classic, you know, platformers. And it was really interesting how they played in their community versus how they were playing those games.
Yeah.
You know, in kind of this like more mixed audience. And I think there's something there for learning as well and something about the types of like credentialing programs that we might want to consider.
Yeah.
That I'd never seen in any other talk kinda to like, customer situation before.
Well, kind of like
so now that you're all about talking to customers, will that kind of extend backwards towards wanting to talk to villagers and RPGs?
You know this. You've listened to our podcast.
Until I took an arrow to the knee.
Dude, that is so interesting. Like, it's, you know, I love talking to customers in my, like, IRL life, but I hate RPGs and talking to villagers. So Adam is referring to this like argument that Ryan and I have had in our podcast where I'm just like, no, let's just go to the boss and fight him. And if I didn't learn something from a villager, it doesn't matter. I'll figure it out through the fight. Like, let's
get
to the fight.
What you're admitting is that you don't actually care about solving villager problems.
It's fine if the villager's in my RPG
chart. But that's actually, okay, so hold on. Not to make that about customer education, but that's literally how most people onboard, especially onto more self-service products, right? They don't want to talk to the villagers. They just want to go fight the boss. And when we offer some sort of onboarding tour. What are we doing? We're like throwing a bunch of villagers with menial side quests where you have to go like bring them their chickens before you can actually go fight the boss. And so, right, so like a lot of people are going to go like try to fight the boss. They're going to lose. They're going to get frustrated, like to Dave's point earlier about Slay the Spire. So why are we like throwing villagers with them when we could actually just like arm them with a better experience that like equips them to fight the boss?
We do make them talk to villagers a lot. And I'll tell you, like, I'm probably like our worst nightmare as a learner. I hate completing stuff. I don't need to do it. I'm going to go in there, get the thing I need, and get out. Like, you know, so like literally the worst.com.
No, all learning people are the worst.
Yeah.
You know, like that's how everybody is. And
oh, what was it? Oh, it was just recently Christy said that, you know, I don't, I'm increasingly not caring about completion rates because exactly what you said, Dee, it's like in our manifesto, Adam says this, meet our customers in their moment of need. Once they got that need acquired, they're out. And that's what's like, we almost need to tag a lot of our content to show, okay, in this segment of this, this segment, oh, I got to that segment. Then they were looking for blah, 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 blah. And they got it and they out, we completed that 100% for that need. That's really cool. Sidebar, if like what we were talking about are NPCs, if you haven't seen them, look up on YouTube, Viva La Dirt League. They are a troupe of actors out of the UK that do the end, like they go into D&D and Baldur's Gate, all these things. They've got a fictional city, town, village, and they act out this whole conundrum of the life of an NPC. It's phenomenal. This. You gotta
wait. What is this? Viva
La Dirt League. It sounds like it's a weird name.
Okay.
But
Dirt League.
Yeah, Dirt League. Okay. Google it. It's great. I've now they're doing like a D&D thing. So it's.
I just saw her using her phone. This is the first time she has ever explored something to do with villagers.
In a game, by the way, if anyone's listening, I grew up near. Nothing against villagers in real life.
If any villagers are listening, run.
It's only in RPGs.
She's got area effect. Dang, oh my god!
We're gonna have to issue an apology to all the villagers who listen to our show.
I want to go destroy the boss, save your village, come back and get drunk with you in your village later.
Then kill you for your gold.
That's.
Yeah.
All right, we've just heard Dave admit he kills villagers.
Oh god, this podcast is
okay
terrible.
Yeah, if we have any hope of making this under like 90 minutes, I think
we need to move on.
Yeah.